Blog Talk Radio.
Denise Griffiths is your partner in success. Tune in each Friday as virtual assistants, industry expert, web developer, and online entrepreneur Denise Griffiths interviews industry experts from one end of the internet to the other. These expert entrepreneurs freely share their business building knowledge and provide practical guidance that will show you how to build and grow your own very successful business, be it online or traditional brick and mortar. Now, ladies and gentlemen, your partner in success, Denise Griffiths.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to your Partner in Success Radio. I am your host, Denise Griffiths, and today I'm excited. I get to welcome to the show speaker and author and entrepreneur, Josh Hines. Josh is known as a pioneer in bringing motivation and personal development resources to the internet. I'm a techie, I'm a nerd, I'm a geek, I love all of it. When you say motivation and personal development resources to the internet, I'm all over it. In fact, Bob Berg, another one of my very favorite people, who is the author of The Go-Giver, says Josh Hines is becoming, in my opinion, the Earl Nightingale of the e-world. Not only is the man pure motivation, but like the great, late great Earl Nightingale, knows how to attract other motivators to join him in his mission as well. Go to his site, bookmark it, return often, learn from it, and most of all, benefit from it. Josh has a terrific story, and I'm going to let him tell it. Good morning, Josh, and welcome to your Partner in Success Radio.
Hey, it's a pleasure to be here. Appreciate the invitation.
I'm so excited.
Me too.
I have your
Me
book.
Too.
I've been reading it. It's a great book, and you have got a terrific, terrific story, and I'm not going to interrupt you. I would just like you to tell people who you are, what you do, and how you got to where you are now, because it's a terrific story.
Well, I appreciate that. It's quite a story. It's one of those things when people ask that, it's got so many moving parts to it. Sometimes I don't really know where to start. So with that said, I'll be happy to back up and touch on anything if I leave pieces of it out. It won't be intentional to me. I'll be happy to touch on them. But I guess as good a place as any to start is at about 15 years old, I had the opportunity to start working in our family business. It was really in a startup phase, to the point that there really wasn't even enough extra money to pay me to do, you know, kind of minimum wage jobs that you would normally, a teenager would do. So what ended up happening was they created a job for me. And what I ended up doing for my very first job was telephone sales. And I was qualifying clients, you know, adults basically. And then at the point they were qualified, I would hand them over to an older salesperson to handle the deal. And then, you know, by the way, I was instructed that my paycheck would be straight commission. So it was one of those things. At the time, I always like to tell everybody, I wish that I had some kind of great, you know, foresight to think, hey, what an impact this could have if I can do well with this. But really, to be honest with you, I was just kind of naive, I think. I didn't know it was supposed to be hard. Yeah,
right.
You know, I didn't know it was supposed to be hard, and I didn't know it was supposed to be difficult, and I didn't know this was a particular job that adults weren't necessarily always well at. So I just kind of followed steps that were outlined, ended up doing well. And really about that time, I was also introduced to, quote, you know, personal development motivational books. And the first book that I read was a book by Zig Ziglar called Over the Top. And really what was interesting, that particular book kind of opened up a lot of thinking for me. Even though I was still fairly young, of course, you know, it really opened up a lot of things and thought that, hey, you know, conventional wisdom tells us, you know, that if we stay in a project, we can learn over time. But if we open up to possibilities, if you will, we can actually be proactive and learn faster and, you know, grow and improve faster, if you will. And so there were a lot of ideas in that book. And I always tell everybody that's really where my, you know, quote, personal development journey kind of started. And I did that business stayed in the family business for several years, became interested in entrepreneurship and different things like that, and developed those skills. And then this is really where the sort of another important part of my story kicks in, the adversity, one of the big adversity parts, if you will. One of the things I didn't mention is I was actually diagnosed with what's called Tourette's syndrome at about 8 or 9 years old. People listening may or may not know what that is. It's a neurological disorder that can have just a whole host of symptoms. One of the more, you know, colorful, definitely rarest symptoms with people with Tourette's is uncontrollable cursing. A lot of times people will think that that's what Tourette's is. It's actually a really mild symptom that could, that people with Tourette's can have. I've never had to deal with it myself. So for me, my Tourette's was always mild up until a point when I was 18 years old. Keeping in mind my story, I had been involved in business. You know, I actually did telephone sales and things like that. I was comfortable with and had developed those skills. And then at 18 years old, I found myself in a position where I was picking up the phone, going to call a client like I had done just a bunch of different times, completely comfortable with. And, you know, Denise, all of a sudden, I couldn't even say what it was that I wanted to say. It was literally like, I don't mean to diminish, you know, people that deal with stutters, but it was like that times 20 or 30. And as a result, had a whole bunch of anxiety and really just kind of like in that moment, I remember finding myself at a point where all these things I had taken for granted, these life skills, you know, really to the point where it's like, you better figure something out. You're going to have to get another plan because I didn't know how much it was of a challenge it was going to be deal with going forward, but I knew it wasn't right, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And
so what
so,
did you do? What happened in that moment? I mean, did you just kind of panic? Did you wonder if you'd had a stroke? And did you wonder, I mean, what had to have gone through your head at that moment? I mean, honestly, yeah. I would have thought, oh, my God, I just had a stroke.
Well, you know, the thing about it was when I look back on it now, it's. I mean, essentially what happened, you know, I don't stay stuck in thinking about it, but when I looked back, what ended up happening was one of the things about, like, with Tourette's is, say if you get a whole bunch of different symptoms, for example, at one point you could have more maybe blinking tics or, you know, a little thing that, you know, might blink or have some type of little, you know, twitch or tick that they, as they call it, something maybe, you know, and then all of a sudden that could go away and then maybe another thing would pop up. And so what ended up, so the best I could figure what it was is what I refer to as a blocking tick, which is really a lot like a stutter. It's like you know exactly what you want to say, but the more you push it out, you sort of struggle to do that. And the interesting thing about it, what I always like to point out to people is, you know, if I'm in a conversation, even to this day with people, sometimes I'll have that little blocking tick still. It'll come and go or be non-existent at different times. But the big difference I've found now is through working through it over time, I've figured out how to, and I think this is one of the key things, is not let the anxiety part of it, which is not necessarily the Tourette's directly, because what ends up happening, and I think this is something that a lot of us deal with, even if we don't have Tourette's or anything like that, is anxiety can really, really, being anxious can really exacerbate whatever it is that we're feeling. You know, and that very much, in that moment, that's exactly what was going on. Now, what it felt like I was having a heart attack is what it felt like. And there was, you know, just to put it bluntly. Now, I mean, I had sort of enough, I mean, I was... You know, it was interesting because I can remember when I was talking to the client was almost, and I speak about this in the book, you know, the client was literally sort of, she was sort of, God bless her, you know, she was sort of coaching me through something that I had done again and again. And literally it was, I couldn't even, you know, she was like, it'll be okay, blah, blah, blah. You know, she didn't know what was going on. I didn't really know what was going on. I mean, granted, you know, I mean, I say that the big time that I noticed it, the blocking tick, as I call it, was in that moment. But really, in little bits and pieces, I had kind of experienced at other points, but I hadn't really thought much of it. So it wasn't literally like, bam, all of a sudden that was it. But that was definitely the big moment. Because I think that's really what caused a lot of the problems, was not so much the particular tick, as I call it, the blocking tick. Again, it was the fact that it went unchecked, you know, and this anxiety built up, and you know, there are, you know, a lot of, you know, psychiatrists and psychologists would probably say it different. But for the most part, you know, we know that anxiety, extreme anxiety and phobias grow like that, right? They don't happen over time necessarily. It's like one event shocks you and then, you know, if you let it keep going out of control, you can have some severe problems. And that was something I dealt with for a long time, you know.
Wow. Now, we're talking about your book. So before we get too far in the weeds here, tell people which book we're talking about.
Sure. So the book that I've written, two different programs. One of them is called Why Perfect Timing is a Myth. But this particular one is my book that's out now called It's Your Life, Live Big.
That's the one I'm reading.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a good book, I'll tell you.
Well, I appreciate you saying so.
Well,
got a
it
lot
is.
Of stories and
yeah,
my
it
own
does.
Life.
It's one of those books that honestly, you know, some books you can sit down at your desk and read, and I do because I read a lot of business books, a lot. I love them, you know, and most of them have pure motivation in them, whether people, you know, meant to do that or not, they just are. And some books are meant to just go off with a cup of coffee, sit in the shade outside, and just delve into it. And yours is one of those books. I can't be distracted. You know, I can't be by a phone. I don't want to be by my computer. I started reading it. Michelle had sent it to me. Your publishing company had sent it. And I just went, oh, my goodness. And, you know, of course, I'm always at my desk. And I thought, well, you know, I'll take a quick look now. I was maybe 4 or 5 minutes into it and said, nope, I cannot do this book justice if I don't give it all of my attention. So that's the kind of book this is. It's that kind of book. You need quiet. You need to be off by yourself on a bench outside in the garden to read this book.
Well, that's a big compliment. That means a lot to hear.
Well, look, it's that kind of, I'm serious, it's that kind of book. I love books. I read a lot of books. This one reached out and just grabbed me right away. So, and as soon as I finish it, I'm convinced that I'll sit down and read it again. So, anyway.
Well,
there you
that, really, that's when I wrote it, that was my hope, is that you know, I'll tell you, Denise, I'm one of these people who I love personal development stuff, of course, mm-hmm. as I know we've talked about before, but mm-hmm. I always have a list of what I call my reread list, and, of course, there are certain books on it, one of, you know, where I come back to I'm intentional about coming back to them. You know, Thinking Grow Rich, of course, is one that a lot of people have on their reread list.
Right.
And so when I wrote this book, I said it's a big task. That would be my biggest honor is if the book could be on people's reread list, so that maybe there's so much in there that they take it in one time, but they realize, hey, you know, this is not something that I'm necessarily going to pick up in one pass, because life's not like that, right? You know,
it's not. Yeah, it has to be. It's an evergreen book. Yeah, it's evergreen.
Absolutely.
Because
you know,
these things always, look, I'm like you, I will pick up a book, I've got so many, and I've read them over and over and over again, and honestly, I pick up something new every single time, because I'm different, or my needs are different, or my perception is different.
Well, and you know, what's interesting, I'll tell you something, and of course, what's wonderful about you know, being a reader and picking up this information. And, you know, I have seen a lot of times people that I work with over the years have said the similar thing. I bet you have as well, is the neat thing about it is even if you pick up something and it doesn't apply to where you are right now, whether you're personal or business life, you still have the advantage of taking that information in. And as you pass through this life, this journey that we all are on, you still have that skill or that bit of knowledge on a shelf. You may not even, and then when you get to that point where you have to access that information, it's a real benefit to you. And I'll give you a perfect example. You know, when I started my quote-unquote, you know, personal, you know, development journey I talked about, you know, I was fairly young. And for a series of years, the last thing on my mind was that in several years I was going to have to work through a particular adversity and do things like that. But fortunately, all along, I had been taking in story from that very first Zig Ziglar book I talked about and other things I'd read. I had been reading lots of, you know, stories, and along the way, you would hear about people having to deal with different adversities. They didn't relate to me directly, but when my life hit that point, I had access of all these things, and that information was huge for me. Now, it was still very hard on a personal level. I'm not going to say I could completely relate to what all these people, but I'm sure that the lessons that I learned before I even knew I had to learn them definitely helped me to work through them, certainly.
Right. Well, you mentioned Zig Ziglar, and I'll tell you honestly, him and Napoleon Hill are two of the books that I picked up when I was fairly young, too. And I really would like to hear that story because, you know, everybody, I think, knows about these two. And, of course, Earl Nightingale. How did you come across your first Zig Ziglar book and at such an early age? That's kind of unusual.
Sure. So what actually happened, like I said, I was working in the family business, you know, and I was doing fairly well. I mean, I was doing my job. Basically, I was, you know, calling on different clients and doing different things like that, pre-qualifying them. And then once you got them pre-qualified, hand them over to the salesperson. Because after all, you know, who wants to deal with, who's going to have a lot of faith that they're looking across the thing and it's a 15-year-old or a teenager, you know, figure of the business that we were in. So, you know, but fortunately, I was doing fairly well. It wasn't like I wouldn't say I was necessarily, you know, superstar salesperson because basically I hadn't grown into that yet. But, you know, fortunately, one of the salespeople said to me, they said, Josh, you know, you're doing well, and you'll get better over time. That's part of the process, unless, of course, you're learning to do the wrong thing, which is not the case here. You can get good over time, or you can be proactive. And, of course, it's not like I was Einstein or some prodigy today. So it wasn't like I was, like, proactive. You know, so I was interested. I had piqued my interest. And then basically they said, look, you know, there are books and there are tapes and there are, you know, you can listen to these programs and you can pick up, you know, just like going to school, you know, you can pick up whatever skill set you want. And so really at that point I said, it sounds interesting. So we ended up went to local Sam's store in my area, and there just happened to be a book called Over the Top, which is kind of a sequel to Zig's very famous, you know, See You at the Top.
Right.
And I read that one first, and of course that pulled me in. I remember something that I still try to, you know, pattern my life around is the old saying, you know, you can have everything you want in life if you'll only help enough other people get what they want. And there were tons of, you know how Zig's books are, tons of just great wisdom for your personal life and professional life. But that quote, all those years before, and that was when I was 15. And put it in context, time right now, I just turned 39 a week ago.
Happy birthday.
You know, well, thank you. So, but, you know, it just goes to show how at the right time, whenever, you know, things stick. And so really from there, of course, then would just pick up other books because they would be mentioned, and one book would mention so-and-so, and I would say, that sounds interesting. Let me see what they have to have. And not everything that I read or picked up resonated with me. You know, I've set plenty of things aside because I just couldn't, they didn't really hit with me at that moment.
Sometimes they may not. You know, I never throw a book away, never. I may give it away if it doesn't, you know, suit me, but I cannot bring myself to throw a book away.
Me either. Never have done that.
Mm-mm. No, but, you know, I'm so impressed that you were able to find Zig Ziglar and somebody led you to Zig Ziglar at the age of 15. That's pretty astonishing that you had the wits about you to understand that there was something pretty great in there. I have to tell you, Zig Ziglar, I picked up some tapes, some audio tapes of his at a garage sale many years ago. I still have them. Can't listen to them. Have no machine to listen to them with. And they're yellow, and probably the tapes are dried out. I don't know, but I come across them every now and then. You know, I'll do my annual cleaning out of junk, and I'll put them on the pile, and then I put them back in the, I can't get rid of them. You know? And I'll tell you what got me about Zig, honest to goodness, was the wisdom, obviously, but just the way he talked. I mean, I'm from the South, you're from the South. I mean, there's something about a good old-fashioned Southern accent that just reaches out and grabs me. And when you've got that kind of wisdom with that kind of accent, I mean, I thought he was hilarious. But I also thought, oh, my God, this is the most brilliant stuff I've ever heard. And between him and Napoleon Hill and Wallace Wattles and, you know, just a whole host of others, I mean, I took off running, and now I've got a massive library of these guys. And you're right. When you're ready, that wisdom is already there. It's, you just need to go back and find it.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and that's the neat thing about it is, you know, people will often, you know, fortunately not a lot, but of course, you know, like anybody that's, you know, written or teaches on topics I do, you know, sometimes people will say, you know, what you're saying is, you know, I've heard that before. And
right.
As though, you know, they're expecting me to say, what? No, you haven't. I'm not a plagiarizer, blah, blah, blah. You know, it's like, but all I can say is, I hope so. You know, I'm not the guy that they bring out when you want new thoughts. I'm the person when it's got to be so simple, so bottom of the shelf that you absolutely don't want your organization and the people in it to miss it. And that's a good thing. You know, that's not going to resonate with a lot of people that are way up here, you know, some of the really, that get into the really, really, really deep thought leaders, and that's okay. That's okay. I think we're all created to deliver a message that's important a certain way.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I don't know about you, but I want it put in simple terms. It doesn't have to be particularly elegant. I just want you to tell me what I need to hear. You know, I need the little bit of wisdom. I need the nugget. And you can keep all the superfluous nonsense. I really don't need it. I mean, I can spell it all. I just don't need to hear it.
Yep, I agree with you. You know, and I mean, and now don't get me wrong. It's not like, okay, I'm only reading simple. It's just like I know you're not. You know, take it all.
No, we're both very bright people.
But, you know, and what's interesting, though, is without a doubt, you know, it takes all different kinds and different things will resonate. I'll tell you one of the things I tell myself constantly, and I don't remember at what point I kind of thought this up and started telling myself. I guess it was probably about the time that I started writing and sharing my thoughts. I'll tell you as an aside, a lot of people ask me how I started writing. Well, the way that I really started writing, to be honest with you, was I had all these thoughts in my head, but if I got in a conversation with somebody, it was like a jumbled mess trying to get it out. So, you know, really my ascent into writing articles, which eventually got me into doing books, the book that's out, things like that, was really just out of a bare necessity to, you know, communicate what I knew I could. You know, for a whole host of reasons, I had difficulty with my voice, so I just created this other medium. And, you know, but from that, what's interesting is I came up with this thought, you know, that as I would think this stuff, you know, and that is personal development is a hands-on project where we really have to be the biggest, you know, part of that. And it sounds really simple, but if you really think beyond the simplicity of it, it's a little bit complex because so many people, and I was like this, so many people are reading something and they get like, let's take the topic of visualization. There's all these different facets and different ways, best practices and all these things people do, but at the end of the day, and I don't mean to jump around on your knees, but I think it's a good example.
No, it's okay, I'm following.
At the end of the day, if somebody wants to introduce visualization to life, if they're not an overly visual person, like maybe they respond more to audio or they're more auditory in nature, you know, that's okay. And the simple solution is not to try and fight with yourself to keep trying to see these highly visual pictures that you're not necessarily personally programmed to see. Just step back, do the same thing, and recite it to yourself or record what you want on a tape and let that be your visualization. And a lot of this stuff is really that simple, you know?
And see, that makes sense. I mean, today, you know, anymore everybody has all these videos out and they want you to watch these, you know, 10 and 15 and 20-minute videos. I'd rather be hit by a truck. I don't like to watch videos. I mean, seriously, I listen and I read and I write. I don't want to have to sit and watch. I hate movies. You know, I'm just not one of those people who learns by being showed things. I need to get in there, break it, put it back together, lose a few screws, and then, you know, I'm good to go. But I don't want to have to watch anything. not everybody's that way. So you're right. We have to be able to figure out how we learn, how we what excites us, and go with that.
Well, and, you know, the great thing about that is it really gets down to what I call, you know, using the law of least resistance, which, you know, maybe it's a little simple to say, but it's exactly what it is, you know, breaking down the barrier of what's supposed to be difficult and, you know, basically taking, you know, getting down to the nuts and bolts of whatever it is. So if you read on a great idea, and the great idea has, you know, all these different moving pieces, take it, get the basis of it, break it down as small as you can, and implement a piece of it into your life. You'll be far better off getting a piece of it started, or as I talk about with action, getting in the activity, even in a small way, than if you sit there and you wait for everything to be right, to have all the moving pieces exactly right. You'll be farther along.
Yeah, get something in there. And that leads me to one of the topics that I wanted to talk with you about is goals and goal setting, because I know you have a really great system that, you know, what is it called, the goal card system?
Yeah.
Can you tell me a little bit about that?
Sure. So as far as the goal card system, what I always like to tell everybody is, you know, don't expect to hear any, you know, drum roll or any, like, parting of the seas or any huge things like that. A lot of the components in the goal card system, as we talked about before, are things that you've probably heard in different ways, and really hopefully what will be unique, if they are at all, is the way that we put them together. And so with that said, what I always teach people to do is to use a 3x5 index card.
I have a stack. You know, as nerdy and as geeky as I am, I still use my index cards, and I use a Sharpie. And, I mean, I have a lot of clients. I have a lot of tasks. So I'll assign one card for each client, and I list out all my tasks. And when I'm done with that card, here's how I celebrate. I check everything off, and then I go, woohoo, and then I shred it. It doesn't need to be shredded. But there's just something about destroying that card, because that tells me I finished it.
Well, see,
does that make sense?
And there you go. You know, and the great thing about that, that's another thing I like to say is, you know, while I might mention some specifics, the key is that I want everybody to get is, you know, again, what I talked about, personal development is a hands-on project. So no matter how brilliant or non-brilliant you think I am, keep in mind that I don't have all the answers. Nobody has all the answers. Mm-hmm. You find what works for you. You internalize ideas. When they work for you, that's what's gonna work for you. Just, you know, and I'll just contrast that with the go-kart system. One of the things a lot of people who, you know, use it, one of the things they like to do is to save, you know, they got the cards checked off, and I'll go through the specific steps in a second, but to contrast with the way that you do it, is what they'll do is they'll take them and shelve the cards once they're accomplished. And then they can go back and use those cards as validation points when they're feeling low or whatever. And that works for some people. Other people, just like you said, I've seen them take a magic marker or Sharpie and put a big X through it or circle it with a big V so you can't possibly read what you accomplished. It's not about the specifics. It's about what works for you and gives you that sense of fulfillment. Because, you know, it's like the saying, another saying I say a lot, success begets success, which is basically, you think of it as a snowball. One accomplishment leads to another one for the simple fact that you feel like you can do something more. And so you stay in movement and your belief system grows. And it's really that simple. So the specifics, I love how you gave that example that works for you, because when I go through the specifics, I want people to grasp that. You know, if you try the things that I suggest and they don't work, it's okay. Borrow bits and pieces of it. Make a system that works for you and use it.
Right.
Yeah. You know?
Some people mind map. I've tried it. It doesn't really work for me. I'm a list maker. I'm an inveterate list maker. I've been doing it since I was a kid. They're gorgeous. You ought to see them. They're color-coded. I have colored bullets. My grocery list is color-coded. So I know what aisles to go down. I know where I'm going in the store. I don't waste any time. I mean, it's just some people just think that way. But, you know, if the cards don't work, mind mapping might work, an online, you know, system might work, just whatever, just do it. Do something.
Yeah, and, you know, like with the gold cards, when I talk about using, and I promise I'll get into the specifics of what will go on them, but
okay.
Since we're talking about the medium here, you know, when I talk about that, when I say use 3x5 index cards, the only reason I suggest 3x5 index cards, one of the key reasons, well, there's two key reasons. One is there's virtually no barrier to entry in the form of money. Because if you can't afford the $3 and something, hey, if somebody can't, I'm not going to beat them down. That's okay. I understand that.
Mm-hmm.
But somebody will give you some of their 3x5 index cards. So we've mm-hmm. reduced that barrier to entry. That's why I like that. You know, two, one of the key things, too, is they are easy to keep around you. And that's the whole thing. It doesn't matter what medium you choose to do. If you don't commit to and do whatever is required to keep those things in front of you and with you, then they're going to become what we call shelf help. And it doesn't matter how good something is, how great the idea is, if we're not in it, if we're not in the activity and being a participant in it, it's not going to be worked on. And quite simply, you know, I can't say it any simpler than this, you know, we know that whatever gets our attention gets done most of the time. And it really is that simple, you know. So now I'll just kind of talk on the specifics. I know I've promised everybody I was going to get into the specifics, and I kept going around this loop.
I'm sorry.
You know. Yeah. But with that said, so the specifics of the goal card is, first you have your main goal or objective. You know, again, promise, nothing, nobody's heard yet. You know, and I stick that at the top of the card, keeping in mind, so we've got 5 index card. But whatever medium you want to use, I'm not going to argue with you. It's a personal thing. So there. And then to the right of it, you could have your, or whatever's comfortable for you. You have, I'm just doing a visualization for people. You have your date and targeted time for completion. And I always like to tell everybody, give yourself a solid date, but give yourself enough wiggle room to where if you don't exactly accomplish it, you don't beat yourself over the head and just quit. You know? Then you want to have your why statement or your statement, what I would call your statement of why it is that you truly want to accomplish it. Now, a lot of people say, oh, Josh, you know, why do I have to do that? Because I wrote it out in my main goal or objective. Well, I can tell you from experience and from working with lots of people and seeing it firsthand that while your main goal or objective might seem like something that's exciting to you, when life pulls you in every single direction with tasks that at least at the time are just as important as what you have identified that you want to accomplish, something's going to get your attention. And it's probably not going to be just your main goal or objective as you wrote it. So really what I'm talking about here with the why statement is a distinction in the way you write it. So, for example, if your goal is a monetary goal, you can write that goal as your main goal objective. But you better come down in the why statement and write at least a sentence or two, something to the effect that breathes life into that goal, such as, I want to achieve this set amount of money because this will allow me to go on a vacation, spend more time with my loved ones or my family, or it will allow me to have more time at home. Something that when you read it, it really pulls you back into what it is that you identified first as being important. You know, and
that makes sense. Because it's easy to write something down and go, oh, that sounds lofty, but why did I write it down? You know, where's the color to it? Where's the emotion behind it? Why did I really do that?
Right, exactly. And I'll give you a perfect example. So let's say the person writes X number of you know, dollars in extra income, and then they have a why statement that says the reason they really want to do that is because they want to be able to take their son or daughter, you know, to the IMAX theater to watch such and such a movie and spend quality time with them. Well, then, when, you know, life throws at them and says, hey, you need to stop what you're doing right now and you need to, you know, do this task or you need to jump in the car right now and put out this business fire, it may need to be done in that moment, but you at least can look at it and compare the two and say, is this thing that could be done later on at a more, you know, I can, well, this is something that can go away. Can I delegate it out? Can somebody else do it? Do I have to stop right now what I'm doing in the moment to put out this problem or this challenge or this fire, as we call it? Or do I need, when I read that statement of why, do I really need to stay on task working on that because this is a much longer? See what I mean? It helps us put it in perspective and pull us back in.
Yeah. And I like what you just said about pull you back, because that's important. It's so easy because, you know, our mind darts all over the place. You know, that's just the nature of our minds, how we think. And if you've got that card in front of you to pull you back and make you take just that breath and say, can I do these things? Can I delegate it? Can I stop right now? You know, take the time to make that decision. And I think that's very important, because it's easy to just go here, there, and yonder and then go, oh, well, crumb, I didn't do anything today.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, the thing is, I'm not saying it's going to work 100% of the time, but a lot of times that's all we need, is to have both, have that up there to make us stop and think just a second and think through what it is we think we have to stop and throw everything down and do right then.
And then you can create a muscle memory after that. You can create a new habit of not just scattershotting all over the place.
Yeah, absolutely. And so, you know, the why statement really is just the thing that keeps us in the game. It helps to keep us in the game when we're going, you know, for example, let's say we have our card and we stick it to the side, it doesn't get our attention. Well, when we pick it back up, in that moment where we're deciding whether it really matters or not, hopefully we see that statement, and in that moment it clicks us. And even though we haven't paid attention to it, hopefully that's not the case, but life can work that way, that's enough to pull us back in and say, this really is important to me. I'm going to put this in my shirt pocket instead of to the side.
Yeah, yeah.
So,
well, you know how I do it,
Josh?
I have a kind of a little trick that I figured out. I've always got stuff that either needs to go to the Goodwill or, you know, you just don't use some things any longer. And I was going through my supply closet and I came across some old business card holders. I mean, my office is in my home. I don't need those anymore. So I put them in the Goodwill box, and then I went, wait a second. So I dug two of them back out, and I put one to the side of my desk. I have an L-shaped desk. The stack of my to-do for that day goes in there, but the one that is primary goes right underneath my monitors. So it is stuck right in front of my keyboard, underneath my monitors, and it is in my line of sight at all times.
What
does
a
that
fantastic
make sense?
Idea. That's exactly,
I know,
doesn't
that make
what
sense?
I'm talking about.
Yeah.
Fun.
So when I'm done with that, you know, I'm looking, I have dual monitors, I'm looking at my monitors, I'm looking at that card, I'm crossing things off, that card goes in the shredder when I'm done, and then I go to the left of my desk and I pick the next most important card. And that's how I get through my day.
See, and that's fantastic. And, you know, what's interesting is somebody's listening to this and they're saying, you know, God, that just seems kind of a funny way to do it. You know, why can't I just put the cards in my pocket and, you know,
but
I'll know to look
them.
At them.
Well, you don't see them.
You know, if that works for you, okay. But don't be so sure, because what
said,
Denise, is true. I mean, I will have my cards, and sometimes I'll even replicate my goal cards in a digital form. So while I may have them written down, I'll set them as reminders in my Google Calendar, because I just happen to have that synced everywhere and here and everywhere. And and you know, a lot of people say, well, that's kind of obsessive. Well, maybe.
I don't think
maybe,
it is.
Maybe not. It makes it simple because I can focus on higher level stuff. If I don't have to, if I've got my reminders set up for the stuff that needs to be done, I don't have to sweat it like everybody else has to run through life. Am I missing something? You know, blah blah blah.
Right.
Am I going to miss the call with Denise? I've committed to do this, to do the show, and I'm really looking forward to it. That's going to pick up because, for example, before this, I was doing a morning walk, and I knew that I didn't have to think whether I was going to be late because my reminder let me know, hey, you need to get back. You know, to breathe, a little breath work, if you will, breathe, and then get on the show. It was simple as that, you know.
Well, I do the same thing. I mean, I have reminders set up on my computer. My iPad has reminders. I mean, use technology where you can, but for me, those cards, when I'm working, when I'm in my office at my desk, for some, and I've tried every kind of system you can think of because I'm, you know, I'm busy. I'm managing a lot of people. I'm managing a lot of clients. Got a lot of things going on. My brain cannot, I just can't keep up with it all. I will go to bed and go, oh, geez. And at 3 o'clock in the morning, I wake up and remember something that was critical that didn't get done, and that's not good. So I found through trial and error, like you did, that these cards work very, very well for me. And I look, I've had people say, are you Superwoman or what? Nope, but I'm very organized. And that's how I do it, is with those cards.
Yeah, I mean, see, and I mean, the thing about it, what's neat about it for you know, all sorts of reasons, I like to think about it like, you know, basically allows us to do what you could call a brain dump. So, because it's going to get jumbled up. There's things are getting thrown at us, what have you, all this, and it's just a lot simpler to be able to, you know, like you said, to be proactive and put it down so that you don't have to think about it. You know, could you, would you think about it? Yes, probably. But isn't it a lot easier to have it there to reduce the stress of having to wake up at 3 o'clock in the morning, and then you know you're going to wake up and take care of it right then anyway?
Oh, I've
done
that.
So, you know, whether you're doing that or not. You know, but one of the key things I was going to say on the goal cards, which I almost left off, I didn't mean to, and this is really the, we've talked about this inadvertently, but this is really the most important thing of the goal cards. So again, just to take everybody through it, you have your main goal or objective at the top, you have your date and target and time of completion, you have your why statement, we know why that's so important, and how we use really descriptive things, and then the key is in the middle, that space. This is what really makes the goal cards work, in my opinion, and helps to keep them from becoming, you know, shelf help that we talked about. And this is where we work on them, and we just and they're heavy on action steps. And what goes on those cards are actions that that we know we have to accomplish in order to achieve our main goal or objective. And basically, what we do is we check those things off. And what I always like to say about action steps, you know, for example, and I'll just use, you know, kind of the generic, you know, earn X number of dollars in revenue or pick up X number of clients as a generic, you know, main goal or objective.
Mm-hmm.
You know, your action steps there don't need to be, I'm going to call 5 new clients. If you really want them to be effective, you'll say, I'm going to call up 5 prospective clients. And their names are John, Jane, Mary, Susanna. You get the idea. And
right.
You put their phone numbers. And that's a small distinction, but it makes all the difference in the world because when you see the card, it becomes a task that's just meant to be done as opposed to a project that you have to formulate all the stuff and it takes all this extra effort and gosh, I hope I can reach this person, blah, blah, blah. And that simple distinction makes all the difference in the world. And once you do it, you check that item off, you go to the next action step, and they're all on this card. And then people say, well, what in the world happens if, you know, one action step leads to another? Well, yes, it will. You write it down on the card again. If you run out of room, which you will pretty quickly, because the cards are not large enough to have massive lists on the same card, and that's actually a good thing because we don't want to get overwhelmed, then you just take another card out, you rewrite the components, you put new action steps, and you can, you know, do anything that you want with the card. You can save it. If it gives you the fulfillment, like you talked about, Denise, you can shred it, do whatever you want. You can take a big Sharpie pen and circle it with a V for victory. You can do whatever you want with it. But you keep doing the cards. And one of the things that's neat about what you were talking about, you said, you know, while the technology's great, you like to write the list down.
And I
think that's important for a lot of reasons because, as you know, one of the things, as we read about goal setting and we do research on topics, one of the things that pops up a whole bunch is that there's something very powerful about rewriting what it is that we want. And that little component, you know, that's true. I mean, it helps keep us plugged in. You know, it's not like we write it one time and then maybe we come back to it. It keeps us in the process. And we have to be in the process to accomplish anything.
No,
so
I agree.
That's the way the gold card system works. You know, and the key is, I always tell everybody, you've got to remember that old saying, out of sight, out of mind.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I add to it, it can be a killer when it comes to the goal achievement process. If you want something, you've got to figure out how to keep it nearby. And if you'll do that, the specifics of doing those tasks, they'll take care of themselves. You know, and people are like, well, how's that? Because it's gonna bug the crap out of you, excuse my language, until you do it. It's really simple.
It will.
It really is that simple. I mean, it's going to aggravate the mess out of you. And, you know, the more you put off that task, you will have moments where you want to stick your card on the shelf and forget about it. But if you resist that urge, you'll still be there, and then you'll do it. And the funny thing about it is, once you do it, then all of a sudden you realize that your procrastination monster, as I like to call it, was never that big. You were just breathing life into it, into that difficulty, because you resisted doing it.
And, you know, have you ever noticed this, too? And every once in a while I'll catch myself doing this. I don't want to do it. I don't want to do it. I don't want to do it. I'm too tired. You know, and I'll come up with all these little weenie excuses. And when I finally just take a breath, or I go out inside and dig a hole, because that's, you know, my stress buster, I go out and dig up a plant and move it to another part of the yard and water it, and I'm good.
Yeah, I like that.
I'm a hole digger. I don't know why. Yeah, I live in the deep south. You can't kill anything. Everything propagates overnight, so you're never at a loss for something to dig up and move. That's just the way it is. But, you know, it's true. I mean, I have tried to kill stuff. I promise you it won't die. But anyway, I will go outside, you know, because I'll know I have a project. I'm dreading it. It's just, I don't want to do it. And the minute I come in after I've dug my hole and start working on it, all of a sudden it just kind of flows because I gave up that resistance to it. And the resistance is what will kill you every time.
Yep, exactly. Exactly. You know, and there are a whole host of reasons that people that are, you know, I would like to say that are probably way more articulate than me, they could lay out exactly why that is. But I've just seen it time and time again. I tell you, I can remember, you know, it's one of those things that people will say. They'll say, well, Josh, how did you get to the point where you started speaking to groups and things like that? And, you know, much less, you know, being guests on calls and things like that. How did you get to that point where you really experienced a point in your life where even picking up the phone, you know, would induce extreme stress, and you know, it just wasn't even something that you would avoid doing? Well, you know, really looking back on it, I'll be honest with you, one of the biggest difference makers for me was, you know, I'd like to say that, you know, it was this huge moment, but a lot of it was really just saying, what the heck? Why don't I do it? You know, why don't I try it? And then just qualifying with whoever was going to have me present and say, you know, I have this block and tick. I don't know what it's going to do. I don't know if it's going to manifest, but I'm just going to go through it. And the interesting thing was, as I did that, now, what's also funny, too, is, you know, knock on wood, for whatever reason, when I'm in front of live audiences, nobody ever notices it. For some reason, it just doesn't show up. Sometimes on calls, it will a little bit, but it does it less and less and less.
Mm.
It's not for any, I don't think it's for any magical reason or anything that I've figured out that somebody else can't do it. You know, it's just the doing of it fills in a lot of the details. One of the best quotes I ever heard is called, I'm so embarrassed, the person's name, I'll think of it just a second, of the quote. I don't like to tell quotes, and I can't remember who the person is. Susan Jeffers. Excuse me.
Oh,
you know, the simple, feel the fear and do it anyway. And somebody that's going through a challenge, that sounds like hogwash. You know, you're thinking, well, that's really simple, but that's not helping me at all. You don't know what I'm going through. Trust me, there's so much power in that if you can get over yourself. And it's hard to do, depending on what you're going through. But just feel the fear and do it anyway. And now I can really tell you, Denise, I never go through a time, you know, I may for a split second, you know, until I get on a call or until I get in front of a group and speak to them or a company, you know, I may feel nervous, But now I look at it, I stop myself and I look at it and say, you know, that's actually a good thing because this I can feed off of this. I can feed off of this energy, you know? And
well,
the fear is not
I
a
mean,
bad
that,
thing.
No. When you lose that fear, that means that you're bored to death.
Yeah, I agree with you. Or even worse, especially when you speak to groups and stuff, or if you're not bored to death, the folks that have to sit through your presentation are probably going to be.
Because,
you know, anybody could get up there and speak and recite and things like that. It's what you do. Right. It's the passion that you exude for the topic and for what it is. And, you know, nervous energy and fear is not necessarily a bad thing. Now, when you're going through it, I'll give somebody credit. If they were going through what I had to go through and have seen, you know, you would hear people saying this and you would think, you don't know my situation. Nothing could be further from the truth. And I'm not disputing that it's real. I'm just saying that once you accept that it is what it is and, you know, realize that if you'll try anyway, it will be exactly what it is. I mean, I'll tell you one of the interesting things, and I'll be short with this example, but I think it's a good one for people to get. You know, when I first started out, of course, you know, I sort of went through my story, what have you. You know, when I first started out, I wasn't doing, of course, speaking, and you know, I wasn't really doing that part of it. I was writing and sharing my thoughts that way, and then of course, early on, I just was mostly just sharing other resources, the websites and stuff I ran. You know, so was laying, you know, so with painting a picture for everybody, hopefully coming from that point, you know, a lot of it was a matter of me having to grow into that. And like I said, you know, one of the ways, the key thing that allowed me to do that was just to say yes to opportunities. And, you know, what I found out was, like initially especially, I don't want to say that I was necessarily, I talked about this in actually a comment the other day, on a Facebook post, somebody was asking about that. I didn't necessarily mention about, you know, the blocking tick and things like that the adversities that I'd gone through, you know, for any reason. It wasn't like I was ashamed or I thought, you know, that I shouldn't mention it. It was really just, I didn't know that I didn't really feel like it necessarily added to the conversation where I would be, you know, this again is when I first started, you know, speaking to groups. But what was interesting really quick early on, people would say, hey, we want to hear your story. You know, that's what makes you human. That's we want to know where you're coming from. And so now, correspond what I thought was, I wouldn't say I thought it was a weakness, I just didn't think it was really relevant, was absolutely now what actually, I mean, is the most important thing I do, really. The other stuff I teach on, the goal setting techniques and you know, ideas, you know, putting action behind your ideas, those things are important. But what actually gets people to sit up and say, maybe this guy has something worth saying, because anybody can say those things. I don't mean to belittle my message, but let's just be honest. Anybody can say it. Probably a lot of people can say it more eloquently than I can. But what I thought was would keep me from behind was a strength once I was willing to put it out there.
Well, and it's a very interesting story. I mean, when we were talking before the show started in the green room, so to speak, you know, I asked you if you minded sharing, because I find that a fascinating part of your story. I mean, it tells people who you are, what you do, why you do what you do. And honestly, you know, these days people are going, oh, poor me, poor. There's a lot of angst in the world right now. And I wanted to talk with you so you could share with people that, you know, yeah, things are tough. Times are tough. Everybody has issues. But, you know, if you just are true to your own self, you can do remarkable things if you just get out of your own way sometimes.
I agree 100%. Yeah. I'll tell you, one of the things that was interesting, I was actually just reading through one of my reread books that I was talking about earlier, you know, Think and Grow Rich. And what was neat about it, of course, people are not familiar with that book. You know, it was written a long time ago. But what's fascinating, the time that we are, we're going through, you know, economic challenges. And mm-hmm. like you were talking about, a lot of people are looking at the economy. And even though, you know, their particular economy, as my friend Bob, you know, as our friend Bob Berg talks about, you know, you can't control the economy, but you control your economy. He likes to say
that's
that.
Right.
I think there's a lot of truth in that.
There is. I refuse.
What is fascinating.
When they announced that there was going to be recession 2 or 3, 4 years ago, I took notice of that, and then I refused to participate.
And
I
bet you
anything,
said, nope. If you broke up now, it's the best decision you ever made. Now, it's harder to do that depending on if, you know, if you're not an entrepreneur, and you can make all these things about whether it's hard to do. I'm not disputing that. But what I'm saying is there's always opportunity. And so with Napoleon Hill, he talked about his book was written in the ground the great time of the Great Depression, some of his writings and studies. And he talks about that. He says there you know, and I was reading just today, he brings up, he says, you know, basically this is a time of opportunity. Because, you know, for a whole host of reasons, and what's neat about what he says, you know, it's a time of opportunity because people with ideas are now are squared with the people that control the flow of finances and opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of things are more even. And that was a really unique way of looking at it when a lot of people at that time were looking at all the reasons why everything was coming to the end. And, of course, history tells us now there's been tons of prosperity. And it'll be the same. It'll be the same here, but it's got to start with us. It's got to start with us.
I agree. And one thing our audience may or may not know, depending on what they know about Napoleon Hill, is that he had a son who was born with no ears.
Absolutely, yeah.
That was an amazing story. And those of you, we're running out of time, so we won't go into it. But those of you who are listening, go on the Internet, look for Napoleon Hill's books. You can go to Tremendous Life Books. They have, I've bought a gorgeous book over there. It's the leather-bound one with all the folio pictures in it. Beautiful. In fact, my clients are all getting that for Christmas. I'm so in love with that book. But, you know, take a look at Napoleon Hill. Fascinating. And you're right, these things do cycle around. We are 2 minutes away from the end of this show, and I didn't get to ask you about your book. Josh, will you come back one day soon?
I will come back anytime.
Thank you.
My pleasure. I always enjoy getting to speak with you.
Oh, thank you. Before we go too far away, I want you to tell people where they can find you on the Internet, and then I want to circle back a bit around to your book very quickly.
Sure. So the easiest way to find me, I have a number of different sites, but the easiest one really is just to go to joshhinds.com, joshhinds.com, and, you know, from there you can, I'm on Twitter and different Facebook, different places like that. You can find all that from that site.
Great. Now, let's talk about It's Your Life, Live Big. Can you give our audience a brief synopsis about that book?
Sure. So, basically, It's Your Life, Live Big. The reason I chose the title is because, to be honest with you, that is a little mantra that I started saying to myself, as we talked about during the interview in some of my point in my life, when while I was doing some cool things with the writing and things like that and sharing it that way, I wasn't deep in my heart, Denise. I didn't feel like I was living as big as I could. And so I was started telling myself that. I started signing the way that I wrote my articles that way. And then from that, I jumped off into this pool of the unknown. Even though, of course, you know, I'd, knock on wood, fortunately, had built my name, what have you, in the personal development industry, and because of the writing and speaking, or not speaking, writing and sites that I run, I had not gotten into speaking and stuff, as I talked about. And so that was a mantra to me. And so, you know, as I started saying yes to those opportunities and doing that, I still sign it that way. But that's the title of the book. And really, in the book, it's a series of life lessons that really helped me to work through a lot of the things and just become the person I am now. And really they're all the things that I share with people that I work with, whether it be in the presentations I do or consulting or what have you, you know, or my articles and stuff that I write.
Now, where can people find your book? Do they go to your website? Do they go to Sound Wisdom? Are you on Amazon? Where can they find the book?
Yeah, so the easiest thing is we're in physical bookstores. I hate to mention, because I can't mention them all, but the obvious ones like Barnes & Noble, Books A Million, a lot of different physical bookstores. And then, of course, we're on Amazon as well.
Mm-hmm. And you're published by Sound Wisdom, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I'm published by Sound Wisdom, and their website is soundwisdom.com. Now, they don't sell the book directly there, but they have lists of us and a lot of the other authors that are part of the same group. And it'd be fun for people to read through there, check the company out.
Yeah, it's a nice website. We are out of time. I cannot believe how fast this hour went. Thank you so much for being with me here today.
Oh, it's been my honor. Thank you so much.
Oh, thank you. Well, listen, everybody, this is Denise Griffiths and Josh Hines wishing you a wonderful weekend. Excuse me. And I will see you next week. Thank you, Josh.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.